Session number 24730, Reel 3.
The food was marvellous.
Mr. Boxall, Reel 3. Now, what about the journey home? You set off in August, you think, 1940.
Yeah. I can, when I do the notes, get my notes out, I've got it all down there on the exact days and that, or exact date. We left Baird Barracks, trained down to Bombay, went on board the Orcades.
Orcades?
Orcades, O-R-C-A-D-I-E-S, was a liner which had been, was out in Australia when war was declared, and she was just coming home. So she was fitted up for civilian cruising, and we all had cabins, and it was, you know, the food was marvellous. It wasn't slung domestics or anything like that. We set sail, went to Colombo, we went to Short Colombo, and then round to Cape Town, and we went to Short Cape Town, and various people came and collected us and took us home to give us a meal. Came back and then went up to Freetown. We were in Freetown when the Empress of Britain sailed, and we saw her sail out. She went out on a fast run of her own. We were fortunate. We went out. We had a cruiser with us. But she went out on her own. And a couple of days after she'd gone, we were out at sea and we heard on the wireless that she'd been bombed and sunk. So we were fairly lucky to get through. But we came through without any problems, one or two scares. But
A comfortable voyage?
No, yeah. It was a bit more comfortable than the way going out, I'll tell you. Although it was in wartime.
And it took a long time?
Yes, it was, 6 weeks, I suppose.
From late August to...
Yeah, till early November. It was, it was a long... Although, of course, with the conditions that there were on the ship, it was a lot easier than it was on troop ships.
Now, where were the battalion when you got back?
Battalion were at Weybridge.
Is that where you joined them?
Yeah, we docked at Gourock. And then the Orcades sailed down to Liverpool to unload, and I think there were six of us went down to Liverpool by train to get our stuff off the boat, load it onto a container on the railway, and that was then shipped down to Weybridge, and we went down to Weybridge. We got into London about 11 o'clock at night, and there was an air raid on, so we were stuffed into somewhere, and finally we to get out of Weybridge we had to go out to Clapham Common because Waterloo, I think, had been bombed or something. So we had a good introduction to what the war was all about.
I wanted to ask you, did you notice many changes in England? You'd only been gone.
But I mean, there were things like the blackout, and you weren't allowed to show lights, and when you got on the underground, all the platforms were covered in people who were sleeping there because they used them as air raid shelters.
What about did you notice rationing? I mean, I know you're in the army, you wouldn't notice it.
Well, no, you did notice it when you went home on leave because you got a ration card, and your mother had to eke out what they could get.
What do you think morale was like, you know?
Oh, it was all right. I mean, you know, people... I mean, my mother was bombed out twice. But even then, she didn't let it get her down.
So, had things changed when you rejoined? You joined as a man now.
Yes. But I wasn't there very long before I was posted back up to the depot.
So you didn't join a company?
No, I didn't join the company. The band were sort of disbanded, and I was posted up to the back to Britannia Barracks.
So the band would...
were then split up between companies as stretcher bearers.
And you went right. When would you get back to the depot then?
Hmm?
When would you get back to the depot?
I think it would be before Christmas, 1940.
So in December?
Yeah, sometime in December.
And what happened at the depot? You were joining the depot?
Yeah, I was a dining room orderly for a couple of months.
What did that involve?
Looking after the dining room, cleaning up the tables and seeing the place was clean and general skivvying, really.
What do you think of that?
Not very much. But I wasn't there all that long because then I was posted out to the 70th Battalion, which was a young soldiers' battalion. And I went to Bertram Newton, to an airfield at Bertram Newton, where we were doing guard on the RAF aerodrome.
Bertram Newton.
Bertram Newton, yeah.
Bertram.
Bertram Newton. It's out somewhere up north of in Norfolk.
Did you still class as a young soldier then?
Yeah, because I was only, just over 18.
And still Royal Norfolk
Regiment? Yeah, still Royal Norfolk Regiment.
And what atmosphere did the unit have? How did it differ from sort of you've been in a regular?
Well, they were all young boys who'd decided they wanted to join up. Then half of them decided they didn't want to stay, so they went absent most quite regularly. But we did fatigues like warring around RAF camps and guards on RAF camps. We were sort of the precursor of the RAF regiment.
Did anything actually happen while you were? Because some of the airfields were attacked.
When we were at Bertram Newton, we were out on a decoy drone and we got bombed one night with a doctor, phosphorus bombs and I don't know what all over the place. But it was one of these places that they'd made up as a mock airfield.
What do you remember of the bombing of the decoy?
It was a matter of putting out phosphorus bombs and covering them with sandbags and things like that. You just had to do whatever you could to stop the place getting burnt. I was never anywhere where we were actually badly bombed.
And you'd gone there, December?
Yeah, and then we moved from there to Swanton Morley, which was another airfield. But I wasn't there very long when I was posted to battalion headquarters in the demonstration platoon, where they were training young soldiers to be NCOs, and we had a demonstration platoon. I was part of that.
What were your duties with that? What did that involve?
Well, you had to go out and lay out in the field and camouflage yourself up so these young people could come along and see if they could see you and show them how to do things. Eventually, I was put on the course myself, so I then became a Lance Corporal in, I think it was about March or April, 1941.
So you were there 42. Quite a while with them.
Oh yeah. I was with the 70th Battalion until May 1943 when I went to the Parachute Regiment.
Can you tell us a bit more about the course you went through before you became a Lance Corporal? What was the course like?
Oh, well, it was, you did drill, standing one end of the square and standing the other side of the square and shouting your blooming head up, trying to make the person at the other end of the square do what you wanted them to do, and you had to learn all of where the words of command were given and how they were given, and you had to learn to do the drill, and then you had to learn the musketry training, and it was all done to equip you as an NCO to be in charge of a section of men.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. Well, once I got on the ladder, I was away, wasn't I?
Did you see it as a career?
Oh yes. Well, I'd always decided I was going to do. I'd always said that I was going to get my pension and then finish. And to get my pension, I've got to do 24 years. So because 2 years of boy service didn't count towards pension. So
and that meant if you were going to get that long, you had to get promotion.
Oh, well, yeah, but some people sort of did stay as private soldiers or arch corporals or whatever, but that wasn't for me.
You wanted to get as high. Did you have a target in mind?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I had a target of being a regimental sergeant major, and I was.
You really, that's what you wanted to do?
That's what I wanted to do, and that's what I was in the end. Yes.
How do you think you'd take into army discipline? You know, I mean.
I'd been used to do it, doing what I was told. I mean, my father was fairly strict. He was an ex-company sergeant major. He was fairly strict, and if he said do, you did. If he said jump off the blooming pier, you jumped off the pier, and that was it. He wasn't a bully, but he was strict. And my mother was strict. I mean, my mother, if she told you to do something, you did it. You didn't. There was no arguing or anything.
So when you got to army discipline?
Oh, yeah, it didn't worry me.
Now, the 70th Youngsters, they were at Bertram Newton, then
Swanton Morley. And then I went to Taverham Hall, which was the headquarters here in Norwich.
Taverham
Hall. Taverham. Taverham Hall. And that was the headquarters.
That's where you were
doing I did my training to be a Lance Corporal. And then once I'd finished and was promoted Lance Corporal, I went back to B Company, which was then stationed at Bodney Airfield, near Watton.
What were you doing there?
Well, in charge of a section of men and sort of normal training. We went out on route marches and guards and all sorts of odd jobs, wiring, anything that was going.
So more of the same?
Yeah.
Still mainly connected with guarding air.
Yeah.
So I think the next thing is if we come to in May 43.
Yeah, well.
I'm surprised you didn't go to the Norfolk Regiment.
Well, no, the battalion was closing down, being closed, and they said, they came round, anyone want to join the airborne forces, and I put in to join them.
Now, why did you do that?
Because I thought it might be an idea to jump out of aeroplanes. I was blooming stupid, but they were. It was a thing that, I thought, it was a thing worth doing. And I volunteered, passed the course.
Now, what about the course? Where did the course take place?
Well, you passed the interview, and then we were posted to the 9th Parachute Battalion, which was then the 9th Home Counties Parachute Battalion, it was called. And then from there we went to Hardwick Hall to do the training for the parachute course, where you did 3 weeks of training.
Hardwick Hall, Chesterfield.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that course? How did they teach you to parachute?
Well, they didn't, not there. They teach you you did the groundwork there, get you fit.
What was the ground training?
Well, they got you did battle courses and route marches and force marches and anything else that was going. I mean, it was you had, if you fell out on anything, you'd had it. You were posted away. But then once you got through that 3 weeks, you then went to Ringway, which was up near Manchester. Ringway Airfield, where we did the parachute training. And there it was a huge hangar with all sorts of contraptions in it that taught you how to jump out of aeroplanes and out to land and with parachute.
Take me through it. How did this start? What was the first thing you had to learn?
Well, the first thing you have to learn is how to fall down without hurting yourself. They teach you how to fall and roll. And then gradually they do it in a harness, you're swinging, and then they let go and you drop, and then you jump out of not very far, it's only, one of the things they did, they had a wire right up in the top of the hangar, and it had a fan on it, and the harness, and you put this harness on, jumped off, and that let you come down at a speed that you would come down in a parachute. course, the only thing was that didn't teach you that sometimes it might be blowing a bit and you'd probably be swinging a little bit as well. But there were all various different ways of teaching you how to land and how to jump out and what to do. And then once you'd got those basic principles fixed in your bonds, they then took you up in a for an air test, and you went up in the an old airplane, twin engine bomber, with a hole in the floor.
Did you jump from a balloon first?
Afterwards, but they take you up for an air experience first.
And that was just to see.
Just to let you see what it was like to fly. But then the first one you do is out of a balloon, up 600, four at the drop. And you go up and there's a hole in the floor and you sit round, and then at 600 feet the instructor says go and you push off and drop.
What was it like for you the first time?
Well, it's about 120 foot drop for the parachute to open. And the first time you don't know what's happening. The worst one is the second one, because you know exactly what's going to happen. And you know it's a hell of a blooming drop before the blooming parachute opens. But then, once you get into the aeroplane, if you ever see them, you see that they come out and the parachute opens, and instead of you dropping, the parachute blows backwards in the airstream and opens. So you don't drop very much at all.
And what's it like the first time with a parachute?
Well, I don't know. I suppose it's... It's a relief that the thing opens, I suppose. But, as I say, you know, people say to me, oh, you must be brave doing things like that. And I say, I mean, rubbish, we all did it. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't just me doing it. There was another, first off, there was another 10 people in the air, or 6 people in the aircraft doing it. And then when we got into the Dakotas, there were 20 in there. And I was always last man, I was always stick commander in the Dakota, so by the time I got out, it was probably down to about 300 foot, there wasn't much time to go.
Why were you always last out?
I was stick commander.
What does that mean?
Well, I was in charge of the people in the back of the aircraft. Didn't matter who was in there, it could have been the brigadier, but I was the stick commander and he did what I had told him.
What did the stick commander do?
I mean, you had to go in with the aircraft pilot and check that everything was all right and that all the wires were safe and things like that.
And then would you give them orders to get out?
No, that was done with lights. You had a green and red light on above the door. The red light would come on, you'd all stand up and hook up, because you had to hook your strap, there was a strap, and you had to hook that onto a static line. And then... the green light would go and they'd start jumping out. And when it got your turn, you went.
So I still don't quite understand what you were doing. You know, it sounds like you didn't have much to do as stick commander.
You didn't have much to do unless anything happened if someone got hung up or anything like that, you had to help sort of try and get them in. But although very rarely did anyone get hung up.
What does that mean, getting hung up?
Well, we had one chap who'd... We didn't, but I know of one chap who, he had, you have a big long strap fixed to the back of your static line, they call it. Well, he tucked his underneath his shoulder harness, and when he hooked up, he pulled it through and hooked it up. Well, when he jumped out, it went out as far as it got to the pack, and then there it was stuck. It couldn't open the parachute, and he was hanging out the back of the aircraft for quite some time. And they finally... They couldn't get him back in. There was only the pilot and an observer in the aircraft. So they took him over to Pearl Harbor and chopped him loose and dropped him into the water. And then their sea rescue launched standing by. But then after that, they fitted a winch in the back of the aircraft. And we had another chap who went out and his parachute opened in the door and hooked on the tail wheel. And he was fluttering along behind. But they filled one of the kit bags up with... some bags and that, winched it out to him and he wrapped himself round it and they winched him back in again. And so they got him back in all right. And then took him up again and made him jump out straight away. But very rarely did, and I don't know how many parachute drops I saw, I must have seen thousands, but I never actually saw one where the parachute didn't open.
Were you given the tour of the parachute, you know, shown how the parachutes are made up?
Yeah, they took you into the parachute packing shed where the WEFs pack the parachutes.
Did that sort of reassure you? Well, yes, I mean,
you can't be any more reassured than hope the thing's going to open when you jump out. It's just one of those things, you know, it's... And as I say to people, once you put your foot outside the door, ain't no going back. You're lumbered.
Now, so after you've done, you got your parachute...
Power wings.
And then you went back to...
And then went back to the 9th Para Battalion. And then I was posted to 3 Para Brigade headquarters in the Defence Platoon.
So you didn't actually stay with 9th?
No. I was with the 3 Para Brigade headquarters during the... I should think it was early 1944.
January.
Yeah.
And so the 9th parachute regiment was really just a formality while you were doing your training.
Well, yeah, I would have stayed there, but then they decided that, you know, I was a bit, it was worth posting me to brigade headquarters in the Defence Platoon.
What exactly was the role of the Defence Platoon?
Well, I was a corporal in charge of one section of it. But it was to defend brigade headquarters.
When they jumped, you jumped with them? And then
and then provided the defence, you know, we dug slip trenches and provided defence of brigade headquarters. Now, when before we went...
Now, where were they based, the 3rd
Bulford. In a...
Bulford Camp?
Yeah, Bulford Camp.
And what kind of training did you do with
them? Oh, route marches, mostly.
Well, what was a typical route march like with them?
Well, the longest one I did was 50 miles in 24 hours. But we used to do... when we were training to go to Normandy, we used to do route marches... G1098 route marches, which meant you carried everything that you were going to carry into action. And the longest one we did on that was 30 miles. And you had a good load of stuff on. And it was training because we didn't have any transport of our own, very little. I mean, it was all Harry Flatters. You walked. I mean, we walked halfway across from Germany. I don't know anywhere else.
And what other training would you do?
Well, rifle shooting and throwing grenades and any, you know, all tank recognition and all sorts of things. And then, of course, once we got near the D-Day, we went into a concentration area near Oxford. And once in, you were in for good. You didn't come out until we went, got on trucks to go down to the airfield to fly off to Normandy.
What weapons were you equipped with?
Rifles, Sten guns.
We haven't mentioned the Sten. What did you think of the Sten?
That was all right if it was handled properly. But you had to be very careful with it. I had one chap in the Ardennes killed himself with a Sten gun because he didn't...
What was the problem with it?
Well, it was the bolt of it was very heavy, and if you didn't have there was a pin that went through into a hole in the body, and that was a safety catch. Now, if you didn't put that pin in, jumped into a truck and the butt hit the ground, the bolt got came back, and if you've got a magazine on it, you've got a magazine of rounds going off. So I had a chap killed because he did that in the Ardennes, one of my folks.
Any other, the hand grenades, was it just a Mills bomb, or did you, 36, or did you get other grenades?
Oh no, we had phosphorus grenades.
Tell us about that, you haven't mentioned them.
Well, they were like a little tin grenade, and when you threw them, they did, made a smoke screen. And then we had what they called gammon bombs.
What were they?
They were, you had two sticks of plastic explosive, and you rolled it up into a ball and stuck your thumb in it to make hole for the detonator to go in. and then they went on onto a grenade cap, but it had a stockinette cover that went over the plastic, and that was a fairly strong explosive.
Why gammon?
I don't know. Perhaps that was a chap who invented it.
But it was spelt like gammon. Yeah, the yeah.
And but we found that the plastic explosive, a bit broken off it and set light to, boiled a cup of water in about 2 seconds flat. So most of the plastic explosive we had when we went to Normandy got made cups of tea.
Any other special weapons or?
No, because there were, you know, you carried what you could. I mean, 3-inch mortars. Someone had to jump out of an aeroplane with the barrel strapped to their leg, or the tripod in a kit bag, and no, there were no
brain
special.
You did have friends, though.
Oh yeah, we had brain guns. And once again, and Piats. We had Piats.
Well, brain gun first. What did you think of the brain? You had that
was well. That was as good a weapon as we had.
What was so good about it?
It was able to be operated by two men. Everybody carried two Bren magazines in. I think it was their left-hand pouch. You always knew that if you were short of magazines, you could go to the left-hand pouch of anyone and you would find two Bren magazines. That was what everybody carried. It was a good, accurate weapon.
Was it too accurate?
No, it was good enough for what we wanted. What people don't realise is that's all right to have an automatic weapon that fires 1,000 rounds a blooming minute, but someone's got to carry the 1,000 rounds a minute that's going to fire. And what you have to think about in all these weapons is, can you carry the ammunition? That's no good having a blooming weapon, in my view, and not having the ammunition for it.
So the Bren was good because it fired short. The
Bren was good. I mean, it. And as I say, the L303 was a good bullet.
What about the Piat?
Yeah, that was all right, but that was a it was a blooming sight better than the boys' anti-tank rifle, which was a .5 anti-tank rifle, which was bloody useless.
You didn't have them then?
No,
you know?
No.
How did you find Piat? Can you just explain it?
Well, the Piat was all right. It was able to be carried. Parachuting down was in a kit bag, and the kit bag was lowered underneath on a strap. So once you got out of the aircraft, that was not a bad weapon. It was useful for opening up jewellery shops and things like that, I think.
We'll come to that. So you moved into this sort of concentration area near Oxford.
Down Ampney it was, a place called Down Ampney.
Down
Ampney. Down Ampney. D-O-W-N-A-M-P-N-E-Y. Down Ampney.
A-M-P-N-E-Y.
Yeah. And that was the airfield that we flew from.
And what this concentration camp, what was security like?
Oh, they had armed guards around the outside. You didn't get out. Once you got in, you were in. No one was allowed out.
Not even officers?
No. I think the NAFI manageress was allowed out, but she was allowed out with an officer escort, and she wasn't allowed to leave him. But she was about the only one who was allowed out. Everybody else was in, and you were in, and that's it, you were in. And you didn't come out until you went out on the truck to go to the airfield.
And what kind of briefing did you get while you were there?
Well, they had, everybody was briefed. We had table models and everything to show where we were going to go and what we were going to do. And we had a talk. Just before we went, we had a Major General Gale came to visit us. And I can tell you now, Major General Gale came to visit us. And he wore his maroon beret, his camouflage jacket, smock, a pair of pink jodhpurs, and a pair of brown riding boots, his belt and his pistol. And I saw him 3 days later in Normandy, and he was dressed exactly the same, and he was on a bloody great grey horse. And he came and sat on my slip trench with the brigadier.
Oh, what impression did he make at the briefing?
Oh, he was a good bloke. Yeah. Him and our brigadier was a chap called Hill, Brigadier Hill. He was called Speedy Hill.